ever the professional.
Welcome to the 121st edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, David Udo, and we're recording on the Monday evening after the 3-1 win away to Sunderland, 48 hours before Arsenal face Marseille in the south of France. And to discuss recent events, we have the return of a couple of familiar faces alongside a welcome debutant. Firstly, he has relinquished his season ticket, having decided to pick and choose his games. Whether or not he regrets this already, I'm sure he will inform us in time. However, he has other things than football on his mind at the moment, as he'll be running a marathon in 3 weeks' time. So if he misses the last train tonight, he can always just jog home. It's good to have the return of Mr. Mark Ollington.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. Thank you for asking.
Good.
Secondly, his mood goes with the wind, and it's an upbeat one at the moment. A man who enjoys the good things in life, if not always the most healthy. This evening, he's nursing a nice bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon, although fair play to him for having moved on to electronic cigarettes after getting fed up of having to step outside the pub every time he wanted a puff. He'll not be running a marathon in 3 weeks' time.
Or ever.
The things you were saying before we started recording. And I think it's fair to say he ever will. Better to burn out than fade away. It's good evening to the Highbury spy himself, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Where's the makeup girl?
And finally, a new voice on our panel, but a man who goes back as far as Steve in terms of his years of supporting Arsenal. However, there's a difference, because this man gets to witness the action a lot more close up than the fans do. That's because he's the man behind the Offside Photo Agency and has been taking photos of Arsenal pitch side for 40 years now. A long-time friend of the Gooner with many a story to tell, so hopefully we'll get a couple out of him over the next 50 minutes. It's a very warm welcome to Mr. Mark Leash.
Good evening, everybody. Pleased to be here.
So, gents, with Arsenal having smashed their transfer record and the first return for their £42.5 million investment having taken place on Saturday at Sunderland, there's only one place to start, the signing of Mesut Ozil. Mark Ollington, that's a good piece of business, isn't it?
Marvellous. Seriously, it's a fantastic piece of business. It's what we all needed. And like every other Arsenal fan, I was there on transfer deadline day, fretting away. I was actually watching it in Spain, but that's a different story. But thank you for Sky Go. Great, brilliant invention. But joking aside, it was a long, laborious transfer window. And I think come the last day, I was not expecting a signing of that calibre, that magnitude and that excitement. It almost brought back, Dave, those feelings of signing Dennis Bergkamp or Sol Campbell. I put it in those top three feelings of transfers ever. I actually emailed Steve on the day. I think I said to him, Steve, even though our bathroom is still leaky, and even though our kitchen is flooded, and we've gone out and built a patio, it's the best patio known to man. And it doesn't matter that the bathroom's leaking and the floors are flooded, we've got an amazing patio. And to me, that's what's so key about this signing. We have the best patio in the business.
Steve, are you happier that we spent most of our money, well, probably more money than we normally have available for a player, on an attacking central midfield player rather than one of those goalkeepers or a centre-half or a proper wide player or maybe another centre-forward?
Well, come the end of the transfer window...
That's what I was saying, Dave, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not.
I was just pleased to get anyone. And, you know, if you'd have given me a second division centre-half, I'd have taken it that day. I just wanted a player to boost the squad. And when it was Mesut Ozil, I was totally gobsmacked, like Mark. We exchanged an email, we were ecstatic. We could have done with other players, we could have done with a striker, we still need a striker now. So, you know, it's glossing over the cracks to a certain extent. But Mesut Ozil, I mean, if someone had said to me, we're going to have him in our team for this season, you know, I'd have taken that any day of the week. So it's absolutely brilliant as far as I'm concerned.
Mark, if I turn round to you a week before the end of the transfer window, and you know, it was whether we were going to try and go back in for Suarez or something like that, was Ozil such a huge surprise? Or did you have a feeling something like that was going to happen?
Well, there was always the talk of the three Madrid players, Di Maria, Higuain, who went to Napoli, and Ozil, and everyone said it's the last, you know, the uninitiated say it's the last position Arsenal need filling. I'm not mad on stats, but apparently he made more passes in the final third of the pitch than any player's made already this season. And there was something which says if he's got the ball, I don't think the defence will have so much work to do, really, because he was just, and as a photographer, he's not photogenic. He's got more than a bit of, more than a bit of Marty Feldman going on. But the thing is, he doesn't dwell on the ball. He's not Liam Brady standing there pointing with it. It's, he gets it and it's gone, but it's usually gone somewhere that's hurting the opposition. So, yeah, and what I saw at Sunderland in 1 hour with him having a bit of a bug. I, when he was signed, I'm pessimistic on Arsenal signings. I thought some big fisherman from the Faroe Islands was going to kick him into row Z and we wouldn't see him for 3 months, the way things have gone this season. But no, what I saw there is just, you know, the defence won't have as much work to do.
It was funny on, Saturday, because towards the end of last season, when we had that run where we won about 8 out of 10 games to finish fourth, it was backs against the wall. You know, yeah, we were taking a one goal lead and defending it with our, like our lives depended on it, and we got used to watching Arsenal play like that. On Saturday at Sunderland, you know, when we, in the second half, it could have been 4-3 either way. Sunderland could certainly have won that game and at least got a draw out of it, and I was a bit disappointed, to be honest, on Saturday that we never kind of shored up the back like we did towards the end of last season, and it could have cost us the game. Now, a lot of that was probably with Mertesacker not being there,
because
I think we missed him a lot on Saturday. I
just thought it could have been a full stall, though, if Walcott had put every chance away. Yeah. I'm not going to get Theo's back now, because you know, I think it's fantastic, Theo. And he was probably surprised at the amount of service he was getting. And I think, it could, you know, if you'd been falling up at half-time, we'd have thought the title's out. So I thought he gave us a bit of work to do the way we didn't finish the game off. And maybe took away a bit of complacency, could have said him.
Staying purely on the transfer market at the moment, because let's face it, we can't talk about another one for God knows how long. Mark, do we think that this scale of signing will now become the norm? And indeed, does it? What does it have for Arsenal to? Does it have two for Arsenal to compete? I mean, obviously, we've spent the last 7 years shopping in Primark. We have one day we decide to go to Harrods. Want to be there every week?
Who knows what's in Wenger's mind? I don't know, David. I can't answer this question, but what I will say is it has to be a catalyst. Now, if we have got money to spend and the financial shackles have been thrown off, apparently we had, what, £70 million to spend in the
summer? And the rest?
We made £10 million profit on Gervinho. So really, we only spent half of what we had available on transfers. So come January, if we're going well in the league, if we're still in the Champions League in a very tough group, there's every chance that the players that might have not wanted to come before might be more excited and enticed to come along. But who knows? I mean, Wenger does say he's only going to get top quality signings, and Ozil's certainly one of those dudes. So is he now only going to part with the cash unless they're freebies like Flamini? I don't know, but I'd like to think that when Bergkamp first joined Arsenal, we then saw an upsurge in quality of players coming to us. Obviously, that was with Wenger coming to the club, so different scenario. But the optimist in me, David, thinks it could have a good positive effect.
What are you thinking, Steve? In January, I mean, let's face it, Wenger doesn't buy in January unless he absolutely has to, because everyone's injured and he has to buy a Russian gangster who doesn't even know who he plays for.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to go out in January with this extra 40, 60, 80 million, whatever it is he's got to spend, and get us one of those players that's missing?
Well, the cynic in me says that we only signed Ozil for that amount of money because for years Wenger's been promising us a super, super quality player. And he's only ever going to sign super, super quality players. After the Villa game, he needed a super, super quality player. Otherwise, the fans would have been in revolt. You know, make no mistake, if we hadn't signed a brilliant player on deadline day, the fans would have been in uproar, despite, you know, what's happening on the pitch itself. But I think Wenger's job would have been in jeopardy. So he signed Ozil, to a certain extent, to pacify the fans. It wouldn't surprise me, next summer, if he goes and sells one of the top stars, Ramsey or Wilshere or whatever, for 40 million to get the money back. But the excitable non-cynic in me hopes and prays that Wenger will use this as a catalyst to keep his job, get another 2 or 3 year contract, go on and compete with Chelsea for trophies.
You're here for that?
Yeah. Because now he's made that statement, you know, and the money's there. We all know the money's there. In January, let's go out and pay 40 million for a striker. Let's go and win the Champions League. Because most teams would kill for a midfield like we've got. You know, Cazorla, Ramsey, Wilshere,
Arteta,
Flamini. I mean, they probably wouldn't kill for Flamini, but he's great for us. So all we need is 2 or 3 components in that team, and I think we are contenders. So I just hope that, as we've done over the last 5 or 6 years, we don't just leave ourselves 2 players short and miss out again. Now we've come this far.
What do you think, Mark? If, well, let's face it, Suarez isn't going to be European Cup tied come January. We've still got 40, 60, 80 million in the bank. Should we be cheeky and try and get him, or do you think there's no chance?
No, I think there's a chance. There's talk of the Rooney story won't go away either. He doesn't look delighted. And maybe Ozil, the way he set Walcott up, maybe you'll think, oh, we should, you know, maybe it's better setting Theo up to stick it in the box and find, have another player there. I mean, it sounds very gung-ho going forward with 5 players, but I thought there was a bit of a lack of finishing there, Podolski being out for a while. I think Suarez or Rooney's a goer, but when you're talking about the transfer fees involved, 40 million here, 40 million there, as a freeloading photographer, it doesn't pay to get in. It's not my money, so I'm really not bothered. You know, whatever they pay, it's not my cash. These guys, and you, all you guys listening, have obviously got an invested interest in that money. I lose it somewhere with the wages for Ronaldo. It just doesn't mean anything to me. I know Alan Ball costs 220,000. After that, it's all a bit of a mystery to me. But I think the Suarez and Rooney stories aren't going away, and I think we've got to be happy with that.
It's funny that they're not going away, isn't it? Because surely if they were going to sell Rooney, they would probably, you know, he probably not up to him where he goes, but he would probably want to go to Chelsea, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Probably anywhere rather than Arsenal.
Liverpool for Ozil, but perhaps not, yeah. Not now, you know, Steve. Yeah. Chelsea got beaten by Everton yesterday, or the day before. They're not much stronger than us, you know. They haven't got a striker.
No.
Well, not one that Mourinho wants to play.
They've got Bar.
Mourinho doesn't rate him.
So never sold Lukaku, or loaned Lukaku out.
Torres.
Yeah. Not playing particularly well, is he?
No.
For the last 4 years.
But we've only got the one striker. But Suarez,
come on, Barry Bender, come on.
Yeah.
You leave the greatest striker that ever lived alone.
You like Barry Bent.
Still my favourite centre.
I've never said a bad word against Barry Bent. Now I'll be back tomorrow.
Second highest goal scorer at Arsenal.
Yeah.
After Theo.
Yeah, probably.
45 goals.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah. But I really don't think there's any legs in the Suarez transfer. I mean, they've made it perfectly clear they're never going to sell him to us. Why don't we just move on? You know. I mean, I don't want to waste 3 weeks trying to get Suarez in January, and then again on the last day go and get player B. You know, let's go and get player B on January the 1st and put him in the team and forget about Suarez. Good player that he is.
You mentioned player B. This is the big question. In June, me, along with God knows how many other people, went to Mr. Gazidis' Q&A, where he announced we got more money than you can imagine. The only team with more cash is Bayern Munich. Anyone the manager wants, he can have. That's fine. That led to people like me renew our season tickets. And then June passed and no one came in. And then July passed and no one came in. And August passed and no one had gone in. And we were starting to shit ourselves. I mean, Mark, did you generally fear the club wouldn't sign anyone when it sort of came as close as the 31st of August, getting towards the 2nd of September?
Totally. I think that, you know, Wenger actually did want to buy players and spend some money. But it just seemed to be that once again we divvied. I mean, who knows what really goes on behind closed doors.
That's the big question.
With Dick Law and all that kind of malarkey. All I know is that I believe we did change our minds last minute with regards to the Gwen signing. Can't say his name, but with regards to him. And then we went for the Liverpool dude, Suarez. So I'm having a bit of a mental moment at the minute. But yeah, so we changed that. And then after that, there was no plan B, was there? We literally were going, well, who the hell do we try and buy now? We got no idea. And so it all seemed to be very, very, very last minute. And Mark there mentioned the other two Real Madrid players that we were after. I think, if you believe the stories, it was those two chaps that we actually wanted to get. They didn't want to come to us. Real had to make some money back after spending almost £100 million on Gareth Bale. So it was almost like, well, do you want this Ozil chap? Then he went, yeah, brilliant, thank you, that'd be great. As Steve said, we had to make a great signing.
Yeah.
But perhaps we were victims of really great fortune. But no, I was panicked, David. I was petrified all of summer because I don't believe that Wenger had a plan B or indeed a plan A and plan C. And the Flamini signing, that was luck, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah.
That was just pure
opportunity. If Flamini wasn't training with us and wasn't right on his doorstep, would we have that defensive midfielder that, you know...
As Wenger says himself, when he started training here, I thought, no.
I mean, if Flamini was training with Charlton, would he have phoned Charlton up and said, we'll have Flamini? Probably not.
No. And when he came on against Spurs, that entire second half, when Wilshere have got the shits, if we didn't have Flamini there and the players
the
all on that bench, there is no way that we would have won that game.
No. I don't think we would. No, we needed a defensive midfielder all summer.
Yeah,
they all the available defensive midfielders went everywhere else. And I was thinking, we need this. That's one of the most important positions, a defensive midfielder. We need one. You can't rely on Diaby Arteta's not a defensive midfielder. And when we signed Flamini, I just thought, by luck or judgment, we'll take him. And it's turned out a really good signing.
There was more to the... watching the training ground, Wenger actually came out and said something about his mentality. And I thought, how does he spot that? But I don't know. There's something about Flamini. I liked the story that he parked in a visitor's car park.
Yeah.
And everyone said, why are you parking there? He said, I'm not a member of this squad. I'm not signed. I'm just here training.
I didn't know that.
And he didn't put his car with the other players until he'd signed on the dotted line.
That's right.
I'm thinking...
Yeah. Great story.
And it's always class. Like... outsiders inside, yeah, you know I belong here now, and it's very, you know, maybe that's the mentality that Wenger liked.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's
great story.
Right, yeah. It's a great story.
Talking about signings in January though, and player B, Benteke from Villa.
Yeah,
I mean, rather than go after Suarez and waste 40 million on Suarez or bidding 40 million for Suarez, if we put 30 million down for Benteke, who has started this season like he finished last and looks a monster and would be brilliant with the Arsenal service that Ozil and everyone else will give him. I mean, why don't we just go to Villa in January and say, we'll give you 30 million for Benteke?
What, you put him in the team ahead of the top goal scorer in the Premier League at the moment?
I'd certainly like the choice.
All right.
It's a squad game, David.
You say that, but Tottenham bought a whole new squad, and I thought to myself, when it becomes a 15-a-side, 18-a-side game, great. I still don't believe that. I still feel the 11 Arsenal put out at the moment is phenomenal. Obviously the injury, and with the injuries, look at the injuries Arsenal have got at the moment, the players they've got. So you don't want to go and load it up, then suddenly you've got 24 to choose from, because that's what goes wrong, I'm sure, at places like Man City. So we can tough it out from top of the league. Liverpool haven't kicked off yet. It's not a bad position to be in, I say, when you look at six players who can come back from these injuries.
But unfortunately, none of them are strikers.
But are many midfielders, aren't there, Mark? That's what I was going to say. There are many midfielders. I mean, we are very, very light up the front of the park. I get what you're saying.
Sure.
But when you look at the fact we've got Bentham and Park as part of our squad, that's when I start to worry somewhat.
Well, you mentioned Park. When Wenger was asked who he's got if Giroud's out injured, he said, well, Bentham's out injured. We're going to have to turn to Walcott. In the background, you've got Ju-young Park crying with a sign saying, should I use my invisibility for evil or to fight crime?
I felt that's a good point, actually. Where is Park? What's he doing?
Well, I've heard rumours that it's been discovered that he's autistic or something like that, and he trains separately from the team. I'll happily be corrected if I'm wrong.
But what that make you travel?
After spending 2 years under Wenger.
why that make you train differently?
Well, Wenger thought his CV said artistic, but you know, it's just one of those things. Look, guys, to sum up, in a free-for-all, what did we make of the summer transfer business as a whole? Four players in, two on freeze, one on loan, and Mesut Ozil. Loads of deadwood out, although we do still have Park and Bremner on the books. Should we have been considering buying players in different positions? It's up in the air. Grab what you want.
Yes, absolutely.
There's loads of questions there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm not Chesney's, you know, greatest fan. Although I don't think he's rubbish. I think we could improve on Chesney.
We have. We've signed the Italian version of Almunia.
The Italian Almunia. I mean, on Saturday, Chesney's a reactive keeper, not a proactive one. He sees the danger too late.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, watching that Southampton West Ham game yesterday, I mean, both keepers made three or four brilliant saves. All of them, you know, read where the danger was going to be, left their lines and blocked it. Chesney, time and time again, stays in his line too late. He doesn't read the danger enough. Good shot stopper, but I would like to keep her. I would have liked another centre-half, because I'm not sure that Sagna's going to be there all the time to cover that.
It means Jenkinson, you know, has to play if Sagna's playing.
Absolutely. And I still think we're short on the wings. If Walcott gets injured, who covers him?
Oxlade-Chamberlain, if his leg's fixed.
He's out, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
I think just Sagna at centre-half folly should have been blown out of the water after that incident where Sunderland guy scored the goal that wasn't. The way he got bashed up there, Sagna.
Yeah.
He looked like a fullback filling in.
Yeah.
And surely that's alarm bells to say, that's enough of that.
Yeah. So I think you have to say, at the end of the day, my summer was ruined every single day, looking at the papers. And all year, the only quote you ever got from Arsene Wenger was the standard Arsene Wenger quote, no, we are not close to anyone.
Yep.
And you think, well, you fucking well should be, mate. You're paid 7.5 million a year to be close to someone. Don't leave it till 5 o'clock on transfer deadline day.
I was actually very heartened by the... I thought it was a good summer up to, through what he got rid of, basically. I thought that was good.
I think 24 professionals left our club. 24.
Well, the Arshavin in particular. Sorry, who's the French centre-back we got rid of?
Scilacci.
I tell you what,
we got the League Cup coming up, the Capital One Cup at West Brom away, and it comes between two Champions League games and the internationals. Wenger is not going to play one single first team player in that match. Mm. They're all going to get a break. Given the injuries we've got and the fact we sold 28 players in the summer, who the hell is going to play at West Brom?
Chuck-a-pong.
And if we're going to end our trophy drought this year, it certainly isn't going to be the Capital One Cup.
Is Steve Bold registered?
Get him in. Because that game is going to be disastrous for us. That's the way I see it at the moment anyway.
Sorry, but Mark, you were saying, I mean, we got rid of an awful lot of rubbish. And bearing in mind, we've had to pay off the last year of Danielson's contract, because even though he was really bad, Wenger gave him long-term contract, lots and lots of money, and no one in the world could afford to take him on. So it has been a really good thing for us to get rid of an awful lot of rubbish, isn't it?
I think so. I just think possibly, you know, trying, as a photographer, we get along to the training sessions where they're contractually obliged ahead of Champions League matches. But I just thinking, there was a time when Scilacci was jogging around the pitch ahead of the Bayern Munich game last season, and I think he'd already said, I'm not going to Brighton, I'm not going here, and he was jogging around with a smile on his face like a guy who's earning a fortune for jogging around that pitch. And I think when other players, it's an inspiration possibly to the younger guys to say they're not there picking up that money anymore. I think it's just a good vibe. Fans maybe, but I think for the players, younger players on the training ground, to not have those guys thinking it's like a professional attitude. Hey son, if you don't make it, you could be like me. Look at the car I'm getting in, and I just jogged around the training pitch. I don't think that's a good vibe to have around the club. So I was really pleased that was done, and it was kind of more ruthless than it'd been for a while.
I see exactly what you mean. I remember a few years ago we had a young centre half, Ben Chorley. He left on a free transfer, and they said, well, why did you leave? He said, well, you know, you've got centre halves in front of you, people like Sol Campbell and Kolo Touré and Martin Keown. They teach you everything before you even get near the team. There's a couple of other people behind him, but then you've got someone like Igor Stepanovs, and I see him and I've forgotten more about football than 11-0. He's going to play for the team over me. He said, it broke my heart. I realised there's no future for me at Arsenal. Okay, he's crap at Orient, but you see the point I'm making. Right.
Is that where he ended up? Is it Orient?
Yes, no, true story. Captain Orient.
You asked me, Dave. You asked me what I thought about the finale of the Captain Orient. Because I likened it this summer to when I saw Gary Newman once play at the V Festival. And I'm not a big fan of Gary Newman, but I thought it's bound to be quite good. I go and watch him. And he played a 60-minute dirge of all his new songs. It was very, very heavy, not very great. It was dire. But at the very, very end, last minute, he played Cars. Everyone loves Cars. That was like this summer, really. A whole summer of pure dirge until Cars came on at the very last moment.
Well, that's a perfect way of sadly summing up Arsenal's behaviour.
Absolutely.
Mark's book of analogies is coming out next week.
I just say you didn't ask me. You asked the other guys how you felt when.
I am sorry, Mark. I wasn't ignoring you.
No, when Ozil was signed, how did you feel? And I just thought, that's a bit of quality. There was no real excitement. I can remember where I was when I found out that Bergkamp had signed for Arsenal. I was in Cape Town, and it's the day after a big drink, trying to drown my sorrows, when England had got demolished by the All Blacks in the Rugby World Cup semi-final.
Wow.
Phone home. Oh, this will cheer you up. Arsenal signed Dennis Bergkamp. I was running around this hotel room, and the other photographers in the room were kind of guessing, why was I so happy? As long as we failed a drugs test, are we in the final? It was all this. I went, Arsenal only signed Dennis Bergkamp. They went, Arsenal fans. They went, so we're going home anyway, are we? But it was...
The funny thing is,
I feel a bit ashamed about that now. Yeah. It's a bit too girly. I was nearly 40 years old.
Yeah.
But it was genuinely. I mean, I tried to feel happy when we signed Jeff Blockley as a centre half. Tried to find positives. And
I did.
I thought that John Hawley gives a bit of trouble.
Yeah, when
we signed Ray Hankey.
Well, I was really excited about Blockley until I saw it.
I try to always see the best in every signing we made, but was an undue show of emotion. I really.
Hankey and Hawley, they were terrible, weren't they? Hankin and Hawley.
Mark, on that note, I really, really want to make the most of you as our special guest. Can you recall a couple of your favourite memories whilst working as a snapper at our games?
Arsenal games?
Yeah.
I think, obviously, it's a massive game as well, but the 1979 Cup Final, I've been a few years as a freelance photographer, and the Football Association didn't let me on the pitch, but they let me in an elevated position where the exits were, on that platform, where TV cameras were. There was a spare couple and I was on that. And two goals to Arsenal down the opposite end of the pitch. Couldn't really see them, didn't make pictures. And it was all, you know, people were packing up and going home. United scored two more goals down that other end, and a drunken United fan who'd been sleeping on this platform suddenly woke up and he was punching the air, da, da, da. He was dancing in front of me, and I managed to just shoot around him the sequence of Rick's cross, Bailey missing it, Sunderland sliding it in. And I've been asked many times, where's the pictures of Alan Sunderland running away with joy? I said, well, at that moment, a steward tried to get the guy down. The fan punched the steward in the face. They fell on top of me and my camera gear. I was half hanging off this platform. But, you know, happy days. That's the one that I always remember. Yeah.
Who cares about the pictures?
Exactly, yeah. Celebration. I've got this beautiful sequence of Bailey reaching and missing it. And, you know, the number of times you've seen that, I'm glad I've recorded that.
Yeah.
And possibly the other one, it's odd now. I know people, you know, say there's a League Cup, we're talking about West Brom putting out a reserves team, but 87, that was massive. We haven't won anything since that 79 final, have we? 87, White Hart Lane. I actually got this hybrid. I'm a photographer and I'm a fan. I went to Arsenal for the first match. Clive Allen scored 1-0 to Tottenham. I went with my friends from the local pub to the replay. I don't know why. And got a seat outside the ground amongst all the Tottenham fans and cheered loudly, you know, each Arsenal goal. And then I was back on Wednesday night as a photographer and on the pitch when I know, just running on the pitch to the final whistle, and a steward at Arsenal used to like to give the photographers grief, said, I know you, you're on that video, aren't you? And there was a moment where George Graham, who knew how to play the press, he just waited with David Rocastle, saw me, brought me in and stood for the picture. And as the flash went off, Brian Moore on ITV, what a picture, you'll see that in your newspapers tomorrow morning. Brilliant. And most of the photographers, I think, were Tottenham fans, or they weren't into it. I don't know what the rules were, but I was on the middle of the pitch at White Hart Lane with a camera. And it was just chaos, but yeah, what a night.
That trio of matches in 87, that League Cup semi-final, the home leg, the away leg, and the third match, which we lost a touch for, played it at White Hart Lane. I mean, even now, after all these years, that trio of matches, probably the most memorable series of games I've ever seen.
I was only 6 years old at the time, just getting into football and seeing my family go crazy.
We were 2-0 down.
I've watched the videos, don't worry.
Yeah. I was 11, I remember those games so clear. That probably redefined me as a fan, those three groups, because, you know, I've never been through that type of thing before. No. It was just phenomenal.
Well, the middle game on the Sunday, I went from the Earl of Essex pub in Danbury Street, Islington, went up there in a cab, don't worry, Scotch John will sort you out the ticket. 5-3, please say, you got a ticket, move on. Where's Scotch John? And these two Tottenham fans were saying, we haven't sold, you know, Danny's ticket yet, so I'll have it. Sat next to these two Spurs fans. Clive Allen scored early on. They were jumped up on the ground. I just stepped there, head in my hand, said, is there a bar here, mate? Can I get a drink? They went, you're not a Tottenham fan, are you? Well spotted. And I was in the West Stand upper.
In those days, it was dangerous.
Exactly,
wasn't it?
West Stand upper. But I'd been in the pub all lunchtime. I wasn't, you know, I was just, got my beer goggles on. I was happy. I was just trying to get another pint. But I remember, I mean, I don't remember the big moment. They reckon that they announced at half-time about Tottenham fans being able to get their tickets for the final.
Clearly.
All I remember was they tossed, before the fans left the ground, they said, the replay will be here on Wednesday. And the whole Arsenal end went, they cheered. Yeah. We'd lost at Highbury. They fancied it at White Hart Lane. Yeah. And they were rewarded on the Wednesday.
Yeah. If I remember rightly, that was in the middle of a sequence of really good performances at White Hart Lane. We seemed to go there at that period in the 80s. Never lost there.
No.
Brilliant, brilliant.
When we were like 10 places behind the league, something. Yeah. Beating 4-2 in the boxing day.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Mark, just to finish us off, you're very, very close to the pitch where you sit, obviously, to take your photographs from. I mean, in the years gone past, you see those videos going out before game with all of our big players like Adams and Keown saying, come on, talking to the other players. But, I mean, there's a rumour that Wenger doesn't like his players at all. Do you pick up the way the team communicate on the field, and is it different to how it used to be?
Well, definitely now. I pick up the lack of communication, but I'd say from the Villa game, when Flamini came on before half time, he went straight he went straight over, made a big tackle, and he didn't go, hey, look at me. He ran to Jenkins and was telling him, I think you're a bit too far away from your centre half there, son, in no uncertain terms, point.
Yeah.
And I photographed this sequence going, show me pictures of the last 5 years as Arsenal players, even arguing or pointing. It's good to have an argument sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought players, the great back four, took things on their own. This is a thing. TV cameras weren't even there, but Arsenal playing Sheffield Wednesday once. Chris Waddle running a mop down the right wing. Nigel Winterburn couldn't deal with it. Screaming at Glenn Helder, "I want some help back here. I want some help back here." And Winterburn was, you know, just despairing. The ball went right up in the air, and it's a header between Chris Waddle and Glenn Helder. Waddle saw Winterburn coming, exit stage left, and I swear Winterburn went up and cracked Helder on the back of the head, missed the ball completely. Helder had to go off. I think Groves or somebody else came on that side, and Winterburn thought, you know, I'm getting skinned by Chris Waddle. I need some help. This is the only way you'll understand, mate.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, take the initiative, because I think there has been a lack of. You find that sometimes teams, players will be at each other.
We need an on-field captain. I mean, I think Mertesacker should be the captain.
I agree.
Because he's the one that issues the orders on the pitch. And Flamini did against Spurs, but didn't do it quite so much against Sunderland on Saturday.
Yeah.
So Flamini or Mertesacker, on-field, whether they got the captain's armband or not, they're the vocal guys. Arteta is not very vocal. Good guy, good player, great leader, but not necessarily a captain.
I know what you mean about Mertesacker. When I was at the Fulham game at Craven Cottage, after every goal, he ran straight to the middle of the halfway line and spoke with Wenger for a good 30 or 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Whereas Arteta just makes sure his hair hasn't moved at all. So, you know, it's different things.
What I also like about Mertesacker, at the end of every home game, he does a solo lap of honour.
Sometimes
with another player. And he does that wave. And do you know what? I really appreciate that. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I mean, it takes a German, doesn't it, to acknowledge the fans. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You know, Jack started doing it as well, just this season. Jack Wilshere started doing it. Theo did it once or twice last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they should all do it.
Yeah.
You know, we've paid a lot of money. We won, we're celebrating. Do a lap of honour, walk around, wave to the fans. You know, I know you're knackered and stuff like that, but, you know.
Is their way of saying thank you for paying me my £80,000 this week to lose 3-1 at home to Villa.
And if most of them can do it, they can all do it.
Oh, for absolutely. Yeah. On the subject of the Villa game, we recorded the first podcast of the season the Monday evening after that home defeat. And since then, we've had 3 wins in the league, qualified for the Champions League group stage, and top of the table on goal difference, at least until Liverpool gets something at Swansea this evening. Mark, is this going to be a season of triumph from the ashes of summer despair?
Yes.
Thank you. Same question next week. Wonderful. Why is it going to be that good just because we've had 3 good results recently?
I share some of Mark's optimism, even though I'm very worried about our lack of striker. I think, you know, apparently Podolski is due back in a couple of weeks, recovering injury a lot quicker than we first thought.
From 3 months to 3 weeks?
It's going
to
be October the 1st, apparently.
That's an anti-Wengerism, isn't it?
I know.
Usually 3 months is 9 months.
Steve, I would say exactly the same thing.
Yeah, in what year? October the 1st... 2013.
Yeah, apparently so, Mark. Apparently so. And there's another player that's very close to coming back as well.
Arteta?
Yeah, that's the fella. Same thing. So
that's going to be 6 months.
But that's what normally happens, Steve. So if it really is true, and the roles are reversing, and things are changing, perhaps he's now got karma on our side.
Absolutely.
And more importantly, Dave, if you look at the other teams, I think there's a perfect team this season. Look how it's gone so far. Man U have lost. Chelsea have lost. Apart from Liverpool, every team has lost a game. It's going to be wide open. It's going to be like, I'm not going to say that, I'm going to stop. I'm going to refer to an ex-girlfriend.
I'm surprised at City, to be honest. I'm surprised City ever looked better. To get trounced at Cardiff,
a draw.
And then a draw at Stoke. They've not looked convincing in their other home game, apart from the Newcastle one. You know, United, to me, without Ferguson, my goodness, that Ferguson effect was so important for United. Now he's gone, I think all bets are off with them. And, you know, I was saying to some guy on the train coming up here today, a guy from work, you know, you ask any United fan, would you rather have the Arsenal midfield or the United midfield? I reckon 99.9% of United fans would much rather have ours than theirs.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, the back four isn't that much different either. I mean, make no mistake, the Ferguson effect was so massive for them. Now he's not there, we could definitely finish above them this year.
Mark, Yaz Ollington and the plastic population are telling us the only way is up. Is that right?
Well, I was going to say, following on from Steve's point there, the United midfield, but their scouting system is second to none. How they found that guy Van Persie, I mean, you know, we can only dream
of finding
a player like that.
One-footed.
But I'm always looking back, and I just thought the last time we lost our first home game of the season to Aston Villa and letting in three goals was, of course, 88-89 season. And we know how that finished. And
did we lose our first home game that year?
First home game. We beat Wimbledon 5-1 away.
We lost 3-2
to Aston Villa. But, you know, that was with Andy Gray and Rambo up front.
Yeah.
But... You know,
well, you never know, do you?
That never looked like a championship side.
Never know, do you?
And I've already looked, just to gild the lily a bit more, we're away to Liverpool in the first week of February. Right. I thought, well, quite a lot of snow that time of year. So if that game gets snowed off, yeah, it could get put back to the last game of the season. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm thinking it's all pointing in the right direction.
Well, it's about bloody time you won the title, to be honest.
Certainly is.
But as I said earlier, I'm just hoping that Wenger doesn't leave us two players short in January.
Yeah.
Because we're this close now. We are this close.
Well,
to play to teams like City and Chelsea, that have got all this financially doped money, you know, and we have got 40 million in the bank. Let's go and spend it in January.
We're a striker
and
defender short, aren't we? We're a striker, defender, possibly goalie short.
Yeah,
that is it.
I don't mind if we lose the Champions League in the semi final, or we lose the title on the last day of the season, providing we've competed.
The thing is, you grew up the same time as they. Arsenal won it 53 and not again until 70. There was 18 years, and that was hanging around their necks. I personally say, I'm a photographer. My motto is Arsenal owe me nothing because, hey, I don't pay to get in. But they do, all the time. I was there, 71 as a kid on the pitch at White Hart Lane. I was there at Anfield in 89. I could go on, but if I just left it at those two, I don't think you agree. No, you want any more out of a club.
Exactly.
I feel sorry if someone's just come of age, afforded a ticket round about 2005, 2006, moved to the Emirates, gone bang. Where's the trophies? I was planning out days down Upper Street in the town hall. I feel sorry for someone who's just that age, got the money and paid a lot of money, and they've been very short-changed. But people of our age group, Steve, I feel, obviously yourself, you're very critical, and it's a big part of you. But I'm seeing in the cycles, I'm kind of sitting back going, it's going to come again. It's going to come again.
I hope you're right. But my mates, I know who's the same age as us. I mean, they all say that if only it could have ended in 2006 with us winning the European title. If we had won that Champions League final in 2006, that could have been the end of Arsenal in a box. We could all go home happy, and that's it.
So true, though.
We don't want anything else.
We could have to go to the Emirates.
Yeah.
We could stayed at Highbury.
Yeah.
The perfect stadium.
Have you seen that winning goal Barcelona got? It didn't hit Almunia.
I was going to say, I think technically Almunia scored.
I've just seen it from time. It's a shocker. It really was a shocker.
If only we could have won that. That would have been the end of the perfect period. The perfect 10 years from Bergkamp to the Champions League final. Arsene Wenger, you know, Overmars, Henri, Pires, the greatest players we've ever seen play for Arsenal.
But one of the things that let us down in that game was when Flamini came on as a substitute. He was on the pitch for 20 minutes and he didn't touch the ball once. That's a true story. Is he actually a good signing? Is he actually a good signing? Anyone?
Yes. I've said before in this podcast.
Yeah, I know. I'm just verifying.
Mind you, I saw that Wanyama yesterday. I know it was only Match of the Day 2. But from what I saw of him playing for Southampton, he looks a fair player. And he went for about 11 million.
Well, I say, as a photographer, I don't shoot Arsenal every match. I went to Norwich v Southampton, up at Carrow Road, and Wanyama bossed the midfield. But second half, he was but he didn't come out.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I don't know, maybe thought, well, if that didn't win the game, I've done enough for you boys. He definitely goes missing.
Right, okay.
And
maybe the genius that is Arsene Wenger knew that.
He's got those.
Well, Mark, at the end of last season, we did our May podcast, that kind of thing. You see, this is going off, you know. And we said we had a sort of a around the table thing.
Did David?
Who's our best player? Who's your player of the year? And was I laughed at by all three people for my suggestion?
You was, David.
Who did I suggest was our best player?
Aaron Ramsey.
Do you think we've changed our minds about Aaron Ramsey, or did ultimately we always believe?
We are 7 games in, David, to AM season. And don't get me wrong, the guy is playing brilliantly well. But if I was shit at my job for 2 years, I would not have a job anymore. The guy has been very lucky that Wenger stuck with him for such a long period of time. His injury was terrible, horrific, but he took a long, long time to come back from it. And the fact is that he owes us, and he owes us big. He owes us an entire season of big performances, great performances, amazing performances. Because at times over the last 18 months, we were playing with 10 men, and that man was on the pitch. And I believe a year ago on this very same podcast, when Ramsey was getting berated by the panellists, I stuck up for him and said, give the lad time. It was only midway through last season when his performances went from bad to absolutely woeful. And albeit he was on the wing, not playing his favourite position, and yet he'd come a bit better towards the end of last season. And don't get me wrong, this season he's been magnificent. He stopped doing the extra touch. He stopped playing the Hollywood ball. He's actually not shooting 100 foot up in the air. His shots are going in.
Dribbling a lot now, yeah, as well.
But to just, but for when people say, oh, we told you something about Aaron Ramsey. No, you haven't. He had 3 or 4 years of really struggling to come back from that injury. If he goes all season, great, brilliant. I will hold my hands up and say, well done, Aaron. But he owes us at least a season before he's back into debit. He's still minus points.
I don't sound like that at all.
That's a bit harsh.
No, it's Steve. We've played for 10 men because that guy for 18 months.
I'm not
in what other profession could you get
You wouldn't have the excellence. Okay, okay.
Fair enough. He was very happy to be indulged by Wenger for such a long period.
Yeah, I agree. He probably was. But at the same time, Wenger played him out of position a lot of the time.
Five games on the right wing. I mean,
he was on the bench a lot. He wasn't given a run in the team.
He played a lot of games last season.
I mean, I'm not a professional footballer, but I know that, you know, players need confidence. You need to have a run in the team in your favourite position. He never had a run in the team. He did last season, Steve.
He was a first team regular.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we had Arteta, we had Wilshere or Ramsey a lot of the time, and Cazorla, but. I don't think Wenger was giving him the best crack of the whip, to be honest, because he did play him out of position a lot of the time. But having said that, this year he looks like he's beefed up a bit. He looks taller, bigger. Sometimes I'm watching on TV, I'm thinking, who is that bloke? Oh fuck, it's Ramsey.
Yeah, and I saw him give the ball away against Tottenham. But first thing he did, he ran back, and it was a shoulder charge to get the ball back. Didn't go to ground.
No,
shoulder, shoulder, strength. Held the guy off, turned. I thought he was giving the ball away too much last season, but the way I saw him give it away this season, first thing he did, get it back again. I'm surprised that David said he was the player of the season. I'm surprised you've kind of so vehemently
against him. I think
it's been amazing this season. That volley against Fenerbahce, you know, it wasn't all right. The tie was over, but you're thinking,
and the one Saturday against Sunderland.
Yeah, awesome. But did you see the way? I mean, match of the day. Hey, armchair fans. But the way Ramsey just waved and Jenkinson looked up, picked him out, and chipped it to him in the D, and he just thought, I'll volley it from here. Looks like a lot of confidence. Awesome. The game wasn't out of sight then.
No,
that was a 1-1.
Absolutely,
1-0.
I quite like Jenkinson as it happens.
We'll get on to that, because I say to Mark, don't get me wrong. I think Matt Ramsey's performance this season have been magnificent. And I, more than no one, want to see him have a brilliant season, because let's face it, I want Arsenal to win. And if he's playing brilliantly well, that is fantastic. All I'm saying is that we put up with him playing terribly for a long period of time, and he owes us.
How did he pay you back for the season he didn't play in?
What's that, sorry?
He plays two seasons in one. This, you're saying he owes us a season somewhere?
No, yeah.
I'm not quite sure how he pays that back.
No, what I mean is that 6 or 7 games playing well, brilliant. That's great. I'm chuffing the fella. But we've got to be saying the same thing come the end of the season. He needs to do it for 38 games. We're very quick in this country to say a player's either totally shit or totally brilliant.
But I actually saw Wales play one of their qualifying matches, Belgium, I think it was, and Bale was in the game for 4 or 5 minutes. In that time, he ran around the whole Belgian defence 3 times, and the other time he had a 40-yarder which just went an inch over the crossbar, and everyone went. But Ramsey just ran and ran and ran and ran. Very good Belgian team, and I watched him. He was captain of Wales, and I thought, oh my god! And he didn't quite bring that back to Arsenal. That was last September.
You're right.
Now he looks like that player I saw a year ago playing
for
Wales.
The player that we're seeing now for Arsenal has always been that player with Wales.
Yeah.
So that,
that's the part.
Yeah, that's what makes me think. So it could be the tactics that Wenger plays.
Potentially, I think it's more the fans have got an issue with rather than Ramsey itself.
Not anymore.
There's nothing worse than our fans turning around and saying, "Well, we told you so. We told you so." Yeah. It was not about that, really. We're all supporting the same team and everything else.
Yeah.
And if I get another Ramsey supporter going, "Well, look at him. He's the best player in the world." No, he's not. He's had 7 brilliant games. That's fantastic.
I don't sound like that, do I?
No.
Not you, David.
We don't know how to react to Welsh players. Apart from John Hart, and apart from to him.
Peter Nicholas.
Yeah. No, he was another one. Peter Nicholas. He had great potential. Good player.
You know, very, and a lovely touch. Terry Neill ruined him.
Of course, our best ever Welsh international, Jack Kelsey.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Gents, the new issue of the Gooner is out this coming Sunday for the game versus Stoke. And inside, we've got a five-page feature on personal memories of contributors tied in with the theme of Arsenal's 100 years in London's Borough of Islington. Do any of you have a particular memory of the area associated with the club or an Arsenal moment? Mark?
Oh, plenty. I moved to Islington in the 80s and lived there for many years. And then a girlfriend who lived in near Clissold Park, well, then she said, I'm moving. I went, where to? It's Comewood Street, and you could see Highbury from her bedroom window. And
spent a lot of time in there, Mark.
Hey,
not the house you can all see from the TV.
No, not the Diagonal Road.
Between the East End and the North Bank.
It was next door to one of the burgers.
Yeah,
leading
yeah,
up to Bank of Friendship. Yeah. And when they won the league in,
do you remember that house? You could see it on Match of the Day, couldn't you? Every week in the 60s. But even, I'm even watching old Arsenal games on YouTube now from the early 60s. You can still see that house from the vantage point.
But her house, 91, Arsenal were going to do the parade down with a trophy. And we'd been out the night before. I had a few and I thought, oh, I can't do this. Had my camera gear, opened a sash window. There was the Arsenal bus. Photographed it from the bedroom window departing and went back a kip. And I thought, aren't I clever? But if I'd have been up 3 or 4 hours earlier, I could have actually got a picture of Tony Adams asleep on the steps, because old Paddy, the caretaker, let him in that morning.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I was pleased with that shot, but if only I'd been a bit earlier. But funnily enough, 2 years before, I went to Anfield, got back at 3 in the morning or whatever, and the next day, in the Earl of Essex pub again, England were playing Scotland. And I think Steve Ball's making his debut. We watched that. We drank right through the whole day, and all agreed we'd be up. Meet at the Essex at 7 o'clock. We all go up the town hall, and I think I woke up about 3 and went over the pub, and I was the first one to surface. But you know, yeah, those times you think the homecomings are the great things. I think somewhere down the line there are people who come in from Milton Keynes to join the Islington throng. You know, the proper Islington people are still a clip after.
I've heard all those trophy parades, all of them. Well, certainly since the 71 one.
Yeah.
I think 2004 was probably the best one, the Invincibles one.
Mm.
Unbelievable. Outside Islington Town Hall, and you know, in the Bailey when it used to be a proper pub. Brilliant days.
I can remember my daughter when she was born in 92, so when they brought the Cutler's Cup home and she was screaming at David Seaman, and he gave her a wave and she was like, you know, dissolving in my arms. He waved at me. But yeah, they were classic moments. Yeah, they were great moments for the borough.
Yeah.
What about you, Mark? Any particular part of this county which you immediately associate with Arsenal?
Not really a fan of this borough. I'm from South London, really, so for that.
You're a Woolwich Wanderer.
Yeah, so I'd prefer it if I never moved.
Do you know what? I'm a Woolwich Wanderer as well, Well, if any Spurs fan says to me, you Woolwich Wanderer, I'll say, yeah, fine, I'm a Woolwich Wanderer. Don't care. I finish above you every year.
Quite frankly.
Don't give a fuck.
It's an inconvenience having to come to North London all those times. It's only because my granddad supported Arsenal. I had to go. He was a local lad from Islington.
Any chance of moving to Croydon next time?
Exactly, so yeah, that would be amazing if the Emirates had been in Croydon.
Palace would be the new Tottenham.
Palace would be the new Spurs. Did you hear somebody put on the website that in August, or was it September, this month, it was the anniversary of the first North London Derby, 1965?
Yeah.
Because Tottenham weren't in the London Borough of Haringey, that was just formed then, they were actually in Middlesex.
Oh, I see. Tottenham
only been in the London Borough.
Yeah.
Since 65, so
well, that's a cheat, didn't they? 1939 to go against us moving up.
That is a great stat, Mark. I'm going to use that now. I'm almost there. Thank you very much.
I'm verified. It might be wrong, but use it regardless. It's a good one.
Actually, Woolwich Wanderers is not a bad sign, a bad name for a football team, is it?
Perhaps we start up on a separate terms,
Dave. Yeah,
You have FC United of Manchester.
Yeah,
you know,
Woolwich
Wanderers. If Cronky does anything else to ruin our club, maybe we'll set that up.
Yeah,
right.
I was thinking. Sorry about this. No. Having lived in the borough and worked in the borough for a long time, it's a bit of a shame where the next football has come from, because I think the only green grass football pitch, the grass football pitch in the whole borough, is Arsenal's in the Emirates. I don't think there are any other pitches in this
borough.
That's
a telling point, isn't it?
It's all AstroTurf up Market Road.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Clissold Park, it's actually in Hackney.
It is.
And you look at it and it's just...
pretty frightening, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I played veterans football up in Winchwell Hill, where I lived with a fireman who was at... He was Holloway, he was at school with Charlie George, and there was all these school pitches, and they've all gone now,
yeah, I know.
Producing these players.
Even my school's gone.
Yeah.
Never mind the playing field, the school and the playing field. Housing estate.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Well, gents, just to finish this off very, very quickly.
Well, we're finishing.
Sorry?
How many minutes have we done? 20?
We've done 48.
My word.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. There's also...
You've got loads of questions left there.
Can we get
asked.
A last minute equaliser?
I know.
So can we get a last minute equaliser and force extra time?
Don't ask me, ask Kev. You know, it's, anyway.
5 minutes.
We've got an extra five. We've got a bonus five.
That was the voice there of Kevin Witcher. You're interested to know podcast fans.
Who may or may not be in the outro. He nudges and he winks.
Yeah.
No, he is. Anyway, in the new, there's also a piece in the new issue of the Gooner about players' match day attire when they arrive at matches. Because as far as I was concerned, and I understood growing up, for home games you have to wear the suit and wear the red and white tie. And for away games you get to dress down a little tiny bit. Well, now they appear to only be wearing training style outfits.
So, and headphones.
Yeah, no, what always is all that headphones.
About? Dr. Dre beats.
Yeah.
Mark,
yeah.
You do not look happy with this.
No, it's all gone horribly wrong. I remember when one of Tony Adams' many misdemeanours, and he came back at, away to Middlesbrough, a game up there, and I don't know what Tony had done this time, but he was back, and he was on the pitch, you know, looking around the riverside before the game in his Arsenal blazer, red and white tie, everything you described earlier, and Steve Bold saw me and a couple of others with cameras and just protected Tony, and everywhere he went, he got between us, and at one point they popped round, and he looked like the classic... David Bailey picture of the Cray twins. It was it was Baldy and Adams suited up.
Yeah.
And they couldn't look... They looked so menacing. And if you've been to Middlesbrough, if you've been Fabrizio Ravanelli coming out to look at the picture at the same time and saw those two, you'd have gone...
Who was trying to stop the picture being taken? Who was trying to stop the picture being taken?
Baldy was trying to get in front of Adams because he'd come back from... I don't know, it's another alcohol confession or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was trying to protect him from the press and he was just giving us evils. Yeah. But the two of them at one point were just there. And I'm sure, I say, Ravanelli came out and he's kind of... leisure gear and saw those two, he'd probably go, ah, my hamstring's tightening up, physio. You know, he just couldn't have
a lot.
They looked menacing. They
it's
really
pretty unbelievable,
did.
That little anecdote there. And it's interesting that Bold was an Arsenal hero. Sorry, Tony Adams was an Arsenal hero, and so was Bold, but Adams more so. And Bold was the kind of sensible, dominant, kind of protective party there.
Yeah.
And he's the one that's gone on to work for the club and be the right-hand man.
Mm. Yeah.
And Adams is kind of nowhere. I mean, against his wishes, he'd love to be back. You know,
Mark, your particular thoughts. Do you want to see your players in suits before the game on the big screen when they're walking into the ground? Or is it okay that they're listening to really bad music, wearing really bad tracksuits, ignoring the mascots?
Speaking of fashion, Dave, I noticed you're in your winter wear and we're only in the middle of September. Is it that chilly yet? You've got a very fetching, you can't obviously see this. And Marcus as well. There's lots of knitwear going on. You can't see
it. Yeah, I don't
look
at knitwear till November.
Whereas Steve's in his still short sleeve.
I'm in my Ashworth golf top.
Very nice. It's a nice shade of blue, Steve.
Yeah.
But to answer your question,
he's got his Cabernet Sauvignon coat on. He's all right.
Yeah.
I can feel the vibes coming from here. But suits. Of course, we are the Arsenal tradition, heritage.
Absolutely.
Yes, it makes me very, very sad, David. But that is the way of the modern world. What can you say?
Well, when you look at the way of the modern world, I mean, it's telling. I'm a big advocate for Arsenal players to be wearing the blazer with the Arsenal crest, the tie and all that, smart suits. But that is so 1960s, 1970s. Man United wear the blazers and the tie and all that kind of stuff when they arrive at away games. And it looks like a shot from a previous period.
But is that a bad thing, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, you can tell that they would much rather be in their headphones and their, you know, casual gear.
Yeah.
And okay, there's a lot to be said for it being a match, representing the club and stuff like that. But it is 2013. I mean, those guys would never wear a suit and tie for the rest of their lives if they weren't playing football. And I just think it's a little bit dated now to force players to wear suits and ties.
You said that, Steve, but how long then till we stop the rule? What's great about Arsenal is it true that the captain decides if we're wearing long sleeve
Absolutely.
Or short sleeves on the day of a match?
Brian Talbot's debut?
Yep.
Brian Talbot came along from Ipswich, always wore a half. They played a frozen January, his debut against Nottingham Forest. Where's the half sleeve shirt? The captain said we're wearing long sleeves.
That's still,
and after a meeting, they allowed him to roll his sleeves up for his debut.
That's it.
Yeah, I think that's a bit rigid. I think
that's still the case now, isn't it?
They all wear long, they all wear short. Yeah,
but that's
always long. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's one of the great traditions of Arsenal.
But you have it your way, Steve. That'll soon go.
I don't know.
Officially, it's already gone. Do you know the first player who broke the long sleeve or short sleeve?
Chesney.
No, it was Ashley Cole. Refused to wear long sleeves one day.
He probably had half sleeves and gloves on.
Yeah, well,
it didn't last long though. Because I mean, it's very, very incredibly rare for a player to break that rule.
Well, I mean, things come and go, don't they? I mean, it's only been in the last couple of seasons where when they come out, they do the weird handshake thing, they walk to the halfway line, and they clap all four corners of the ground. I mean,
and back in my day, when we, what was it, late 80s, and I really started going, the players had to have their shirts tucked in. And I remember a game for Arsenal, of course. I remember a game when, I think it was pre-season, Michael Thomas came on, shirt hanging out. Graham subbed him because he wouldn't tuck his shirt back in.
Actually, isn't there a rule in Gooner podcast? Is it still a law that you have to have your shirt tucked in?
I think it is. It's UEFA ruling now.
Is it?
You have to have them tucked in. You don't see them hanging out now, do you?
I don't know.
That's why Steve Claridge had to retire. You know, he had to have shin pads.
He never tucked his shirt.
I think you do see him with his shirt out.
I've seen the referees stop going... And but they've got to have the same coloured cycle shorts as the... Gareth Bale had to go off and change his cycle shorts because they were white and different colour, sort of blue.
Petit never tucked his shirt in, did he?
No, he never did. And a lot of players don't towards the end of the match.
Yeah.
But I would never tuck mine in. I've never worn a shirt tucked in my life, ever.
I think that's...
I'm a rebel.
I think a man not tucking his shirt in is an English disease.
Do you? Yeah. You got yours tucked in, haven't you?
I do, yeah. Smarter.
Me and you'll have to have words.
If it's alright for Bobby George and Phil the Power.
Yeah, I feel like a balloon if I tuck my shirt in.
I think my physique carries it off, Steve, don't you think?
Yeah, because you're training for a marathon, I'm a drinker.
Right, on that note, almost time to wrap up, unfortunately. But before we do, a few more words.
Dave, do you think one of these anecdotes aren't quite as good as Mark's?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think it's safe to say that one of you is Frimpong, and over here I've got the Mesut Ozil with a camera, if you will. Thank you very much. So, almost time to wrap up, but before we do, a few more words about the next issue of the Gooner from our editor, Kevin Witcher.
Yes, it is out for the Stoke game on Sunday, and amongst other things inside, we've got a special feature on 100 years of Arsenal in Islington, where the contributors remember their own memories of the place in association with the club. We've got features on Ozil, quite obviously, also Giroud and Ramsey, and much, much more for your £2.50. Please support us and buy the fanzine, keep us going, and give the sellers something to do. So buy. It's on sale for about three more home matches after that, the two Champions League games and the home game being Norwich. So plenty of opportunity to buy. Please support us.
Thank you, Gaffer. Finally, the usual reminder, if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, as Cosmin Olario did from Romania, excuse me for stepping aside, but Mark's pointed this out to me. Cosmin wrote us an email last month saying, "Hi, I found your website today and listened to the podcast in which members of the AST discuss Arsenal. I was amazed at the comments they made about their club. As they're members of the Arsenal Supporters Trust, I expected them to be better informed about Arsenal. Their ignorance about the club is unbelievable, considering who they are." Mark, you pointed this out. Your thoughts?
Well, great email. I heard that podcast. It was very, very good, actually. Perhaps one of the Gooner's best. I think that guy's being very, very harsh. But thank you for taking the time to write in, because your correspondence is always appreciated.
If any of you want to email us anything else related to the podcast at all, our email address is goonerpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, it's goodbye from Mark.
Good night.
Steve.
Good night.
And the other Mark.
Good night.
We'll be back in the latter part of October with our next podcast. And until then, this is your host, David Udo, saying thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Wahey!